Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Hey, Alarmy. Before we get started, we wanted to make sure you heard the big news. The Alarmist has joined Patreon. Patreon subscribers will get access to our content ad-free, as well as our Aftermath post-interview discussion and final verdict. We'll also be putting out additional bonus episodes and other fun stuff. Here's a preview of our Little Alarms series, only available on Patreon.
And this is my little alarm.
Okay.
Is that I have a reaction to something and I don't know what it is. Mm. I will give you guys a couple of options and maybe we can do a poll to the Patreon subscribers.
What? We love a poll.
We love a poll. What do you think Chris got hives from? And I'll give you a couple, three options.
Okay.
Now, I had shrimp for lunch.
Okay.
But this happened at 9 p.m. So I don't think it was the shrimp.
A few hours.
I had shrimp for dinner last night, and I don't have hives now.
Right,
ruling that out for you. Different.
Go to patreon.com/thealarmist and subscribe today. Now, on to our episode. Each week, we decide who's to blame for a historical tragedy. And each week, you tell us if we got it right. My name is Rebecca Delgado-Smith, and this is The Aftermath. The Aftermath. Hey everyone, thanks for tuning into this episode of The Aftermath. Today we're speaking with guest expert Eric R. Ebel. Eric is a Washington State historian and author of Winter at Truckee Lake, a historical fiction account of the members of the Donner Reed Party. He is also the host of the Washington State History Podcast, Washington, Our Home. Let's hear what he has to say about the Donner Reed Party. Hi Eric, thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks, Rebecca. Thanks for having me.
Now, I was wondering what drew you to researching the Donner Party in the first place. I find it interesting that it was actually your first book and the first topic that you decided to write about.
That is an interesting story. Yeah, I was looking for a book project, and I've always been fascinated with history. And I found a publisher who was looking to do stories that were gritty American history, things that people might not have covered before, you know, things that were real, but that haven't necessarily been touched on because they might have been a little too icky, you know, to talk about, a little too taboo. But, you know, to be truthful, history's messy, you know, history is ugly. History can be disturbing. And the publisher I was working with wanted to approach those topics with, you know, a sensitive lens, but not shy away from them. And so they reached out to me and asked me, you know, are there any topics you'd be interested in? And so I, you know, I gave it some thought. Salem witch trials came to mind. You know, certainly some of the incidents that happened between Native American tribes and you know, the U.S. Army came to mind. But then I thought about the Donner Party, and I thought, you know, that's something that's always sort of fascinated me, and I've never really known enough about it. And I think that's a story that really should be told because of the depth of not only emotion, but psychological just tension, I think, that took place in that story. And the fact that it was a real thing that happened to people of all ages, you know, here in America. And so that's the one I landed on. And that's what drove me to tell that story.
It's wild. Yeah. So the Donners, it's 1846. They set out west. It's mid-May from what I've read. And from my understanding, their departure was pretty late for a group to set off on a journey that usually took 4 to 6 months, right?
And
what was unusual?
Anyone who's ever played the Oregon Trail video game growing up knows that you get to make a choice whether you leave in the early spring, the mid spring, or sort of the pushing on summer. And that decision kind of determines how you fare in the video game. Well, the reason you get to make that choice in the video game is because that decision in real life can affect how you fare in westward migration. And the Donner Reed Party, unfortunately, chose to leave later in the season. They left in the late spring. And, you know, because of that, coupled with a series of unfortunate circumstances and bad decisions that were made along the way that caused a number of delays, led to the fact that they were way behind schedule by the time they got to the Sierra Nevada mountains, and they got stuck in the snowstorms of winter.
Now, I we're going to get to all of those series of events, but before I would like to get some context on, well, what are some of the reasons that, you know, groups or families might decide to pack up and head out west during this time period?
Yeah, great question. So back in the 1840s, really as early as the 1820s, 1830s, there was a sense in the United States of needing to expand the country, there was a concept called manifest destiny. Manifest destiny was this sweeping desire to see the new-ish country of the United States stretch from the Pacific Ocean to the Atlantic Ocean. You have to remember, Lewis and Clark had just recently, as recently as 1805 and 06, found the Pacific Ocean on the other side of the continent. And so only 15 years later in the 1820s, you know, there was this idea on the East Coast that, hey, maybe we on the East Coast should have our people stretch all the way across to the Pacific Ocean. So there was this idea that was sort of fomenting on the East Coast that, you know, we should be packing up and spreading our peoples across this land. It became such a fervor that there were artists painting, you know, pictures about it. There were, if you do a quick Google search about Manifest Destiny, you'll come across all kinds of not only literary works, but you know, artistic works, just sort of, you know, stirring up that nationalism of you know, patriotism, and really there was this drive to move the country forward by moving it west, and so there was it was seen as your duty to spread the country as far west as you could. And so everybody who couldn't really make a successful go of it in the Midwest or in the East, you know, saw it as an opportunity for themselves and their family to try for a better life out on the West Coast. And so the best thing they could do was sell everything they had, invest in a couple of wagons, pack it all up and head to California.
What a time. And who was part of the Donner Reed party? How large was it? How many families? Why did they come together? Who were some of the main players?
Yeah, good question. So it's interesting because a lot of times people refer to it as the Donner Party. But really, Donner Reed Party is what it should be called, because James Reed really was the de facto leader of the Donner Reed Party. He was, sort of the elected, chosen by the people leader. Some might argue that he was sort of self-appointed along the way. He was just one of those guys who sort of liked to take charge. And, the Donner family had the large family. And so that's, I think, why a lot of folks call it the Donner Party. But there were quite a few families, the Murphys, the Eddies, the Breens, the Kessbergs, the Graves family, and then a number of individuals who came along with them, including hired hands. There were dozens of teamsters and cooks and other helpers, handymen, and other folks who came along. And let's not forget that there were lots and lots of children who came along on these trips. I mean, lots of young children, 12, 10, 6, 9, 8, 1-year-olds, infant children who came along on this trip too. The ultimate number who got stuck in the Sierra Nevada was somewhere around, I think, 87 people who were stuck. But the number who left Springfield, Illinois, or not Springfield, the launching off point was Independence, Missouri. And that was somewhere around in the hundreds. So it was almost at that time like a constant stream. There was every single day, there was wagon train after wagon train leaving Independence, Missouri, headed for Oregon and California during the westward migration period. So there were, lots and lots of people. And some wagon trains moved faster than others based on, how much stuff they had, what kind of wagons they had, what kind of people that were leading these teams, how many oxen they had, pulling these wagons. So, sometimes they would move fast, sometimes they would move slow. Some groups would catch up to other groups, and these teams would sort of, like in a NASCAR race, sometimes, it's an endurance contest, not necessarily a speed race, So it's a lot of groups catching up to other groups and rejoining old groups that they used to be with. And so over time, these groups would merge with different groups. And that's why by the time they get to a certain, point, Fort Bridger or, certain forts in Wyoming or Walla Walla, for example, they would maybe stay there for a week to recharge and replenish their supplies, or maybe they would only spend a night there and then speed along their way. And that's why groups would, catch up to each other and things like that. So the group dynamic was always changing. The size was always changing. So it's really hard to pin down exactly who was in the group at any given point along the trail. The only thing we do know is who was stuck in the mountains by the time they got
right. there. Right. And would you say any of these people that were part of the group had the necessary skills to lead this kind of journey?
Oh, sure.
They did. Okay. So, and how harrowing was this trip? I mean, the just the day-to-day without even any delays or getting stuck in the mountains, even before that.
Yeah. I would say, to answer your first question, there were lots of people in the group who had the skills to undertake these kinds of trips. It was a challenge for sure, but James Reed, for example, a former Army officer, there were quite a few folks who served in the military, had the kinds of training and discipline it took to lead a group of people across the country. It probably was very difficult to marshal children and you know, women and children as opposed to disciplined soldiers. I have three children and I'm, you know, I've served in the military and it is vastly different trying to get your children ready for school than it is trying to get your troops, you know, ready to, you know, get ready to go where they need to go. So, but what I will say is that, yeah, there were lots of folks who had gone on this trip a number of times. These hired Teamsters, for example, had driven teams of oxen over the Oregon Trail professionally for different groups. They were men for hire who had done this. So they were experienced in this way and had no problem doing this professionally. But the women and children, this was a scary thing for them. They had never done anything like this. And to be perfectly honest, most of the men, the younger men especially, you know, this was a challenge for them. They were looking forward to proving their mettle, having never done this before. A lot of the older men as well, having never done this before. A lot of the old women, there were a number of folks who, you know, were not necessarily up to the journey, but were coming along because their family had decided to make this journey. Sarah Keyes was the elderly mother of Margaret Reed's. Margaret Reed was James Reed's wife, and Sarah had tuberculosis. Wow. And she was in the latter stages of tuberculosis. But James Reed said, "We're going to California anyway." And unfortunately, Sarah didn't make it. She didn't make it very far outside of Independence. She died shortly after they left. Wow. And she has a grave site to this day, very near where they their launching off point.
Now, who was Lanford Hastings? Why was he so intent on promoting this new route out west?
Yeah. Lanford Hastings, the man who allegedly discovered a new and better route. Lanford Hastings is an opportunist, I believe, who, you know, wanted to, sell books and, make a little bit of money. Unfortunately, I just don't think that Lanford had taken into account the result of what his actions would do. Lanford was the author of The Emigrant's Guide to Oregon and California. He had gone over to Oregon and California and come back again, allegedly had come up with a quicker way, had discovered this shortcut that he called a shortcut, which took emigrants through the Great Salt Lake Desert, as opposed to going up and around, which was the route that most of the Oregon travelers took. Once he made this route, which, by the way, he took on his own with horses, not with wagons, he documented it and then sent letters back with reporters to all of the emigrants who were on the trail, telling them that he had found this great route, that they should take it. It'll cut days off their trip, if not weeks, that it'll save them miles, and that he will personally guide them along the shortcut, and that he would leave them notes pinned to trees and tied up, you know, along rocks and whatnot, so that he would help them find their way. He delivered on some of those promises, but you know what happened was is that those promises did entice a lot of folks to take his shortcut, including James Reed and the Donna Reed Party. They opted to take the new and better route that Lanford had promised. It did not, unfortunately, result in a new and better route. It was not shorter. In fact, it added over 100 miles to their journey. And it added weeks to their trip as well. They spent 2 days trying to cross the Great Salt Lake Desert, which at night was freezing and by day turned into a morass so deep that their wagon wheels were stuck to the axle.
Wow.
It was impossible. Some of their oxen died of thirst. They couldn't find any water. Some of the emigrants abandoned their own wagons because they simply could not proceed any further. They simply gave up on everything they had and focused solely on getting out of the desert alive.
Wow.
Cursing the name of Lansford Hastings along the way. Some people literally stripped off their clothes and ran naked into the desert, never to be seen again, because they had gone crazy from exhaustion. This was the beginning of the end for members of the Donna Reed Party, and really the point where people started to realize we've made a terrible, terrible mistake.
Wow.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Now, I had read that, and I believe this is before they even hit the desert. There had been a some kind of quarrel between James Reed and another member of the group, John Snyder.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It was a fight. And eventually Reed does end up killing Snyder's at some point during the trip. How did that shift the dynamic in the group, and how was it dealt with?
Yeah. So tensions at this point, obviously, are stretched thin. Supplies are running low. People are nervous. They know that they are running way behind schedule. The whole group is tense. They're not sure what is coming next. They're not sure what's around the corner. And at this point, one of the Teamsters that belongs to Reed, named Milt Elliott, loses his temper and starts whipping one of the oxen that belongs to Franklin Graves. Graves, by the way, the Graves family is the main characters in my book, Winter at Truckee Lake. So the teamster who belongs or who's working for Graves, the Graves family, John Snyder, comes over and starts fighting with Milt Elliott. And the two are quarreling. And James Reed, again, hot-headed, end-of-your-rope kind of situation, comes over with a dagger and plunges it into John Snyder, killing him. The members of the party, aghast, decide at that moment, despite James Reed claiming that it was self-defense and that he had no choice, decide they've had enough of James Reed taking matters into his own hands and making decisions for them. They decide to banish James Reed once and for all. They had tried to do that earlier, but he had talked his way out of that decision. And so this time they said, that's enough. You've had your turn. We've given you enough chances. You're done. And so they let his wife and children stay in the group, but they send him away from the group and the protection. You got to remember, this is hostile country. Okay. There are Native American tribes out there that are not necessarily friendly to people in their territory. So being in a group of, you know, several hundred is safety. So sending him out by himself is almost potentially a death sentence. He knows that. So they give him some supplies and they say, you're on your own. We don't want you in our group anymore. And so he takes his supplies and he heads on forward. He goes out on his own and, you know, fortunately for him, he goes to the next stop and does eventually survive, makes it to the next group, the next waypoint, I should say, and eventually comes back to the group and reunites with them later. It's all downhill from there.
Wow. Now, let's talk about how things just go downhill.
Deteriorate? Eventually.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
It's around mid-November. The party, yeah. Where is the party and how do they find themselves stuck in the Sierra Nevada mountains?
Right. So by the time they get to the foothills of the Sierra Nevadas, the snow is already starting to fall. Everybody is out of food. Everybody is out of supplies. Most people have no oxen left. They literally are carrying what they have. There's only a couple of wagons. The last draw, if you will, is that just before they head into the mountains, everybody's camped out at the foothills. And one morning they hear a gunshot and they wake up to see what happened. And somebody was cleaning a rifle. It went off and it inadvertently shot somebody in the head and killed him. That was just the most depressing thing anybody could have potentially even thought of. I mean, talk about bad omens of all bad omens.
Yeah.
Nobody is even shocked at this point. Nobody's even screaming, oh my gosh, I can't believe this happened. They literally, with the most morose of demeanors, just drag the body off to the side, clean up his stuff, and pack up their campsites and move on without a word.
Wow.
They head into the mountains. By the time they reach a place called Alder Creek, the Donners decide, you know what, we're gonna camp here because we've got a few things we got to take care of. So we're gonna set up our campsite here. The snow is just continuing to fall. It keeps coming, and you know, snow piles up quick.
Yeah,
especially in the mountains, it's getting bad. The Donners actually have a wagon wheel that breaks, and George Donner's trying to fix it. While he's trying to fix it, he cuts his hand. He cuts his hand, and it's not like you have Bactine handy. There's no Band-Aids, right? There's literally nothing you can do except bandage it up with a dirty rag if you have one. So he knows that there's a very good chance that he's going to get an infection. And in their condition that they're in, their immune systems are very, very compromised. So they decide to make camp at Alder Creek. The rest of the group continues forward. They go about as far as they can. They try to cross over the pass. They find it impassable. Feet of snow. Feet of snow. They cannot get these wagons over the pass. So they decide to backtrack to the lakeside. The frozen lakeside. Oof. They get back to Truckee Lake. They try to make a camp. They fashion some rudimentary structures. They use what ox hide they have to build, you know, to put roof over the top of these structures. And they essentially just hunker down to try to wait it out. Maybe the blizzard will pass. Maybe they'll get some clear weather in a couple of days. That doesn't happen. Oof. The blizzard lasts a month. And then they start to starve.
Wow. And at what point do they realize we need to send someone out for help? And how do they choose that group of people, and how do they fare?
Yeah, good question. They first start to realize when they're oxen start to die. Smartly, they take their oxen and they place them in an area where they can freeze them and eat them later. But they realize they don't have any food left. And so they form a party, which later became known as the Party of Forlorn Hope. They send that party out to hopefully get across the pass on foot. Franklin Graves has the bright idea to make snowshoes to try to walk over the top of the snow instead of sinking into it. Unfortunately, it didn't work. They didn't make it over the pass, and they never made it back. Later, somebody in that party did make it through and did get over the pass and got to the other side to get the attention of help on the other side, and was able to marshal a rescue party to come back to the other, to where they were located, which is eventually how they got rescued. They got rescued in the spring, February and March, in waves. There was a rescue party number one and two and three, and they had to be taken out little bits at a time. But over the course of those rescues, the people who were trapped at the lake either died off or were forced to consume those who had died. Wow. In order to stay alive. It was literally a choice between life or death. It is not something that anybody should have to face. It is a horrific situation that nobody, hopefully, should ever have to be in.
Who of the group were the survivors, and how did they do after this very traumatic experience?
Yeah, I don't have the list in front of me, but some of them did survive.
How many? What was the number out of the 87 you said that had? Or just about how many?
About a third of them probably survived. And I will tell you this, it's of the ones who did survive, some of them went on to make their rest of their lives essentially about their ordeal. They did news, interviews, they did magazine interviews. This tragedy became a spectacle that captured the attention of the nation. And some of them, made a big deal about it. Some of them actually were accused of murdering, some of their fellow travelers.
Wow.
In order to eat them to survive, and actually had to go through a trial and be, acquitted or in some cases convicted. Some of them just wanted to be left alone. They disappeared and never spoke of this again. And one of those was, 9-year-old Nancy Graves, who was the main character in my book, Winter at Truckee Lake. She, for the rest of her life, never spoke a word about what she participated in during those fateful months, which is why I was able to use her as the main character in this historical fiction piece, because we're left to speculate what she might have undergone during this ordeal.
And there were a lot of children who survived. Right. Is that right? Yeah.
Right. Yeah. In fact, many of the children survived, which I think goes a long way toward the resilience of children. You know, some of the younger children who were still dependent on their, you know, their mothers, you know, God bless them. The mothers who were still, you know, nursing gave up their own health and bodies for their children. The children survived, the mothers withered and died. And there's many cases of that happening in this ordeal. But yeah, the children largely survived this ordeal. It's just a spectacular tragedy that took place during this winter.
So unfortunately, we're running out of time, and we always like to ask our guest experts this question. At the end of the day, if you had to pick a person or thing, it could be a concept, that you think is to blame for this ill-fated trek of the Donner Reed party, who or what would that be?
If I had to pick something to blame for this, I would have to say poor choices. And I say that a little bit self-servingly, because my book allows the reader to make a series of choices. It's a lot like a choose your own adventure book. You as the reader get to make choices that either put you in the same situation that led to the historically accurate ending, or make different choices that could lead to potentially different fictional endings based on the choices that you make. If the Donner Party, the Donner Reed Party, had made different choices along the way, maybe they didn't take the Hastings cutoff. Maybe they didn't put James Reed in charge. Maybe they left 2 months earlier than they did. You know, maybe they didn't decide to cross the Sierra Nevadas. Maybe they decided to go to Oregon instead of California. There's a lot of things that they could have done differently along the way that would have led to a different outcome. And we wouldn't be talking about this today if they had.
Mm. Eric, thank you so much for speaking with us today and bringing so much light and information into this topic that, you know, we don't want to overlook.
You bet, Rebecca. Thanks for the opportunity.
And for our listeners, we're going to head over now to Patreon and discuss this even further. If you'd like to hear our post-interview discussion and final verdict, head over to Patreon and subscribe. Your support is greatly appreciated. Check out our show notes for a link or head over to patreon.com/thealarmist. And stay tuned, because next week we will be discussing the sinking of SS Princess Alice. The Alarmist.
Powered by Acast.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time.
That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.